Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we will be speaking to Anna Carvlin about Park Yourself Santa Fe, and Rick O'Donovan will be here playing the hammer dulcimer. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Bill Hutchison and Ben Swan. They're with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Great to be here.
This is a sad occasion for me because it is Bill Hutchison's last show for the at least foreseeable future. You are having the nerve to go to graduate school.
I have decided to make a potentially pointless attempt to better myself.
No, he's quite happy about it.
I am. I'm very excited. I'll be going to University of Chicago to pursue a master's degree in the humanities.
And we and the animals are all excited about it. That we'll miss him terribly.
The humanities as opposed to the dogalities?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. Part of what I study in the humanities is animals and philosophy and literature, and I will be continuing those studies at the University of Chicago. So I shall not be leaving animals or animal advocacy behind, just taking a little bit more of a scholastic bent to them for a while.
We will miss you very much, but meanwhile, there's still lots to talk about. What is going on at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society?
We have a lot of things going on, but I think I really wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on at our resale store, The Cat, just briefly, because it's this weekend that we're having this massive estate sale. It's this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and also Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And I don't know if you've been into the store lately, but we've had this really wonderful, generous donation from a contributor who left us her estate, and we've slowly been getting all her things over to the store and putting
wow.
it behind these partitions. It's beautiful stuff, antiques, collectibles.
This is a person who's been filling her house with awesome stuff for years and years and years. It's wonderful.
And the number of vintage clothes and, like, really authentic vintage clothes from the 30s and 40s is just astronomical. It's just wonderful things.
Wow.
Yeah, and beautiful things as well, little collectibles. She had a range, you know, all very sort of mid to upper range, nothing, you know. We've been selling some of her things throughout the store, but we've saved the creme de la creme for this estate sale, which we think is going to be really wonderful for our animals in northern New Mexico.
And it's gonna do exactly what she wanted it to do. Every dime is going to go to further the programs of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, and that's precisely what she wanted us to do with it. And we feel so honored and so blessed to have been in this woman's heart enough for her to help the animals in this way.
That's beautiful and amazing. Before my aunt died, she gave me her clothes from the 1950s and 60s.
Very
and there's
nice.
a gold sequin dress in there, which is like chainmail. These you can never find these things except when events like this occur.
We've had some of our customers, or not our customers, just people just try to some of these vintage clothes on and other things, and everybody's fallen in love with every single piece.
Yeah.
So
as I've been planning my departure, I've been trying to give Ben my clothes from the late 90s, mm-hmm. but he's turned everything down so far.
No pleated pants. Thank you, Joe. Anyway, the store is at 2570 Camino Entrada, right between Kohl's and Outback Steakhouse. Yeah. It's right in our complex where we have the wellness clinic, the lowest cost spay and neuter clinic, and All for Friends, our latest boutique adoption center, which is an awesome place as well.
It's a great boutique adoption center.
Yeah.
We call it our little one-stop adoption shop. We handpick just a very small number of animals, cats and dogs, to go into this little adoption center, and they change all the time, but they're really awesome critters. And you can get everything you need out the door. You get your dog, your cat, your bowl, your bed, your leash, your toys, and then head on home and enjoy the rest of your life.
Your
vaccinations.
They're street legal.
That's right. Street legal out the door.
And cute.
And the place is fun. There's great people who work there. And they have, you know, we have the canine corral and the kitty.
The scratching post.
Sort of Western theme.
Right.
It's really spectacular.
As opposed to the hitching post.
Yeah. Exactly. You can keep track of all for friends and look at the cat dragged in on the shelter itself. Each one has its own Facebook page. So if you are a Facebooker as I'm sure many of our listeners are, you can get on and see what the haps are. We like to keep those updated and informed.
And there's so many beautiful animal pictures on the Facebook page.
They really are. We have our staff are really good at capturing their personalities, so you can see who they are inside.
And then there's one and two in particular that we saw today that are still there, Chica and Chiquita.
Chica and Chiquita are wonderful. And I haven't even met them. I just looked at the picture.
We've been fortunate enough that we've been sort of fostering them. We have office fosters. Generally, if we have space, we'll bring in a few dogs or whatever into the office and let them just sort of socialize and just play with them. And Chica and Chiquita are just, everybody's fallen in love with them. Chiquita is how old is she? A Chihuahua that's about 15,
yeah,
16?
We think she's somewhere between maybe 13 and 15.
And her lifelong companion has been Chica, a pit bull, who is 12, 13.
Yeah. They're both senior.
They're both senior dogs, but they have the best disposition in the world.
And they are just so funny together. You watch them, and they look exactly what you would imagine with a big, slightly overweight gray pit bull and this tiny little, mostly toothless brown Chihuahua.
Her tongue sticking out most of the time.
She doesn't have any teeth to hold her tongue in, so she stands around with her tongue lolling out of her mouth. They are just so adorable and sweet. They're really wonderful. And it's very funny to watch them. Every so often, Chiquita, the Chihuahua, gets a little irritated with Chica. She gets a little, her proximity sensors go out, gets a little too close. And Chiquita will let Chica know that she is unhappy with current recent behaviors. And Chica, despite the fact that she's about 14 times the size,
will
endlessly defer to her much smaller companion.
Yeah, Chihuahuas have a way with those things.
They really
do. They are. They are much bigger inside than they are on the outside.
They're the grandchildren of mafia bosses.
I have a Chihuahua at home, and she likes to be on my shoulder, like, and watch the world go around and make sure the other dogs don't bother me.
I would like to just put in an editorial plug about adopting older dogs. Having adopted one much older dog some years ago, the little dachshund named Dugan, I had him for 2 years, and they were two of the happiest years of my life and his life.
Yeah.
Having this dog around, and at the end he had a few medical problems, and then he very kind of generously decided to kick the bucket and did so very rapidly, and that was it. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing, and he was so grateful and so happy.
Yeah. Those of us who are in animal welfare, I think, will agree heartily that if you haven't ever adopted an older animal, you are really missing out on something special. Puppies, man, it's easy to find a home for them. And the reality is, and I don't want to put a dent in our puppy adoptions, but they're so cute, I don't think you can. Puppies are a pain. I mean, puppies are a pain. And it's
unless you don't care about the fate of your remote control.
Exactly. Or the various soilings and whatnot. And the fact that you have to teach them how to be in the world, much like you do with a kiddo. But these older animals, both Ben and I have been older animal adopters, and it is just such a phenomenal relationship. There's a wonderful thing that we found out in the world on our website, sfhumanesociety.org, right now on the 10 best reasons to adopt an older dog. And they really, and I think the same goes with cats. They've been around. There's just a richness to the relationship that you cannot find elsewhere.
I think animals will teach us throughout their lives something, but older ones just, there's a sageness to them. They're wise, they know, and they take everything in stride, in my mind.
That's it.
Also, I mean, depending on the breed, for example, I've known various people who've had Jack Russell Terriers, and they just go, 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 and one day they dropped it. And so it's not even, with those animals, it's almost not even like adopting an older dog. It's just adopting a dog.
That's it. I often, my pug who passed away last year was an older dog when I got him. And I remember somebody saying, pugs never get old. They just keep going and more parts fall off.
Oh, dear.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Rather like some very ancient cars or something.
Exactly. You don't ever love them any less. They just get a little more rattly as they keep going.
But I did want to say that Chica and Chiquita, they are in our foster program, but they are both available for adoption. We'd love to keep them together.
It's a must. They're sort of our they're Gertrude and Alice B.
Yeah, they just sort of need to be together, and they're very easy animals.
So if you're interested in them, call the shelter. Ask to talk to Kelly in our foster program. She can tell you all about them. And we'll make you a deal. We just need to find them a really awesome home. We love them. We love them dearly. Ben and I have been sharing an office for the last few weeks, and they've been staying with us a lot. They've been going home with Mary, our executive director, at night. They're with a foster family right now. I mean, it's just everybody loves these dogs.
We used to fight over them, which Chiquita could, which lap was the warmest or nicest that she could sit on.
That's goodness. You know, you should write those things as personal ads, the little dog foster, I mean, the dog adoption things, because they really, I mean, it is about making a match.
That's it. It truly is. It truly is. I think, and we have good adoption counselors, and I think one of the things that is important to us is, you know, a lot of us, we want the dog we want, but sometimes it's a matter of meeting the dog that we need to have and who needs to have us. And ditto with cats. I hate to leave cats out. And rabbits and all every animal that needs a home. It's really a matter of, I mean, we've all been in awesome relationships and we've all been in less than awesome relationships. And you know that it's really not about how good or bad the person is. It's about how the chemistry is. And sometimes that hot, gorgeous person is not necessarily the person for you, but it's that fantastic person.
Well, I have an experience there. You had a chocolate lab that was up for adoption, and I was thinking of adding him to my household. I went out to the animal shelter, met him, and we had no chemistry. And I was very disappointed, but it was like, this is not my dog. The next person who came in owned a ranch or something, and the dog is very happy. So these things have a kind of
karma,
for lack of a better word.
And you really shouldn't. Yeah, I think that, you know, sometimes people, they shouldn't really push it. They should just let it happen naturally.
That's
and,
it.
And you can just go slowly. And even when you're doing the meet and greet, go slowly. You'll know it'll happen. If there's chemistry is there, it'll happen. If it's not, you know, it's probably somebody else will come along and find.
We say it all the time that we don't pick them, they pick us. And exactly. I think it's very true with the two animals that I adopted from the shelter in my tenure there. One, the pug and the cat that I have, I was not looking for an animal either time. They just happened to suck me in emotionally, and before I knew it, that was it. That little pug just kept looking at me and looking at me and looking at me, and that little sucker broke me down. And the gigantic cat I have, who I love dearly, it was when I was working in the clinic many years ago at the old shelter, and I opened his high kennel door one morning, and he stepped out onto my shoulders, and I thought, you have just done something terrible to me, which is absolutely insinuate yourself into my heart. And he's still with me. He's been a great companion for the last several months, especially when I've been here alone without the rest of my family and critters. And he's my pack, and he has just been the best roommate imaginable.
Chica and Chiquita, the pit bull, chihuahua, brother and sister, so to speak.
Sister and sister, that is.
So to speak, and they are available for adoption, ladies and gentlemen. Any other animals you want to tell us about?
Well, there are a lot
every single kitten in the shelter.
we're just sort of...
So it's kitten season,
it
huh?
is kitten season. We're just kind of going at the other end of kitten season, although sometimes they just never end. And we have a lot of really beautiful cats, felines, kittens, and older cats as well.
And they're going to keep coming. Actually, I was talking to Kelly and Kelly, who run our adoption and foster programs, respectively, before we left today. We have 74 kittens out in foster care right now who will be coming back looking for homes, as well as the tremendous number of kittens that we have at the shelter now. So if you're looking for a kitten...
Now's the time.
Now's the time.
Oh,
the selection is wide and the price is right.
And to that point, which we failed to mention earlier, is that we're running a special this at the shelter. $20 adoption fee, which is quite a good deal for animals six
Indeed.
Months and older.
I thought you were going to say three for the price of one.
No.
You know what? If that's what it takes,
if you want three,
make us
three
the offer.
So you can actually go to the animal shelter and make an offer?
Well,
I think it's always worth a try. Our goal is to get them into homes. So if you want to try and wheel and deal, I think the adoption counselors are probably not going to be averse to your efforts.
Excellent.
Yeah, and to that point, Sylvester is a really good representative of the kitten season. This is a three-month-old beautiful kitten that needs a home.
He's a gorgeous little black and white guy. Yeah.
Sylvester the cat.
Duh.
Yeah. Black and white. What else are we going to name him?
What else could you do? Now, let's talk about the evolution of animal welfare in Santa Fe. We've come a long way.
We have. Ben and I have been talking about it a lot. He's been a lifelong animal lover, but he's been in the shelter for how long?
Just a year now.
For a year, and I'm leaving after 8 years, and we both have had such interesting experiences in the shelter. We've been talking a lot about how things have changed. The Santa Fe Animal Shelter has been around since 1939, and the way we got started was the White Sisters who were a lot of Santa fans will know the stories of the White Sisters. They just didn't like the way animals were treated back in the 20s and 30s when they were here in Santa Fe. And frankly, animal control back then was, if there was a problem dog, he was usually shot and his body was dragged to the edge of town. So when they...
Which was St. Michael's Drive at the time.
It was not very far, not very far at all. So when they left the house to form the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, it was their house was the old shelter at 1920 Cerrillos Road. It was really specifically to combat that issue and some other comparable issues. So if you think about, say, a mere 72 years ago now, how far we've come, it's pretty amazing.
And how far our population has grown out towards this area.
Exactly.
A lot of people think our shelter is so far out. I don't know. 50 years from now, do you think it would be so far out?
Exactly. Where we were on Cerrillos Road was not smack dab in the middle of town. So much bigger, lovelier shelter out on 599, we see buildings cropping up all the time around it, and the south side is growing, and it will one day be in its own little heart of the region. But the reality is, even in my 8 years and in Ben's 1 year, I think we both have seen tremendous strides in this community in the number of lives saved, the consciousness of the need for spay and neuter, the way even that animals are part of the family. You know, one part of our mission statement is to preserve the relationship between humans and animals, and the very nature of that relationship is undergoing a constant, I think, very positive evolution. I think it's hard sometimes for people to see what happens with animals because it really is painful, but it's also sometimes painful specifically because those places where relationships diverge from where we'd like them to be are so much more obvious because of how positive those relationships are in other avenues. So the guy who perhaps doesn't treat his dog that well, we see that in much sharper contrast because of how much this community really understands the importance and the need of having these animals as part of the family.
Right, and also just the idea that we have come a long ways, but we still have a little bit more to go. Actually, quite a bit longer to go. Sorry.
Well, as Stephen Cutler talks about, and it's quite interesting, the way that we have animals in our house that are essentially, I mean, they're domesticated animals, but they still have that wildness in them. As we form and deepen our relationships with them, we deepen our relationships with the rest of the environment, which has also taken quite a beating at the hand of so-called civilization.
There's been a lot of interesting research on this lately about Homo sapiens' tendency to self-domesticate. And certainly we have done that in much the same way that the symbiotic relationship we have with dogs and then to a different extent with cats has changed. But we forget that they are still animals. Even, I think, more salient is the fact that we forget that we are animals too. So when we talk about, when the three of us sit here and talk about animal welfare, we're really not just talking about, we're not separating ourselves from them, or when we do, we realize that that can be a problem in our thinking, that animal welfare in the truest sense is taking care of the relationship between the human animal and the animals that we choose to share our lives with. And I think a lot of what Stephen talks about in his book is, and a lot of other really interesting researchers, really helps remind us of the wildness in ourselves and what we could even see as humanness in our animals, because it's not something that's necessarily unique to us. It is the bond that we share with cats and dogs and other animals that we share our lives with, horses and chinchillas and everything else, is the very thing it is to be a living creature on this planet.
And that these animals deserve our compassion, that they suffer, that they love, that they are frightened, that they get depressed and all these things. And I think there's a school of thought that says that we just anthropomorphize those things and we just project onto them our own emotions. And of course that is true to some extent. But also you can see those things, and having a happy animal that's happy not by our standards, namely sitting on the couch and eating bonbons, but by their standards, which is walking and being able to chase things and all those things that dogs do, or name your animal, whatever those animals do.
But just being in our presence, too, is really important for them.
Yeah, having relationships, it's a beautiful thing, and it's kind of what life is about.
And I think Temple Grandin, you know, her latest book, really got it with her title of her book, Animals Make Us Human. I mean,
that's it.
The relationship that we build with animals is something that we hopefully can translate to other humans as well. I mean, a lot of people need a primer, and animals are great for that, about how to take care of people, how to take care of yourself, how to nurture that relationship.
I think that the animal welfare and the animal advocacy movement has grown a lot as well, even just, I mean, talking about the evolution of things in my time here, because there are still those who in animal welfare and animal advocacy see it as sort of a war between bad humans and good animals, and that people are jerks and animals are awesome. And while I think you can cite lots of examples that indeed is true, that thinking doesn't help solve the problems that animals face. And I think one of the most interesting and, to me, hands down the most heartening things that I've seen in animal welfare, both nationally and in Santa Fe, is that I think people are those who are involved in animal, many of those who are involved in animal welfare are able to approach it from that slightly different mindset, that animal welfare is about being good to the people who are in those relationships too, that you can condemn somebody who doesn't behave toward their animals the way you hope they would, or you can help them understand. One of my favorite little mantras is, you don't know until you know. And if you alienate somebody through judgment and through condemnation, etc., then what you're doing is you're building a wall between them and the ability to evolve or understand the power of that positive relationship with an animal. And I think that to me has been hands down one of the most rewarding things, to see people help other people who aren't quite there yet, rather than to get into that mindset of people are jerks and we got to save the animals from the people who are jerks. Because frankly, there's way more people not in animal welfare than are in animal welfare. So we're not going to be able to do it ourselves. We need everybody coming together on this one.
There's also some people who are wonderful who have animals who are jerks.
That's
like
true.
My friend's cat, who every time she gets mad, pees on her pillow.
It's so funny. I love hearing stories about
that's
that.
That's a very bad cat.
We were having a trouble with our dog like that, too. He's very jealous of the other dogs, and so sometimes we come home and there's pee on whatever, and we're like, oh, gosh.
That's right. You know, we use that illustration sometimes at the shelter when we talk specifically about this, that, you know, somebody says, boy, that person was really a jerk to me. And we say, you know, you got to treat them with the same kind of, this dog that comes in and barks at you and maybe snaps at you a little bit. Like, he deserves, that person who does essentially the human version of that same thing deserves the same kindness and compassion that you show to that dog. The dog that does that, you don't want to yell and scream and kick him and whatnot. So you can't do the human analog version of that to the other thing. But I think you're absolutely right. The number of jerky cats that I have known and loved is legion.
Yeah. I taught my dogs to stop barking randomly.
How did you do that? That
would
be great.
You know, I looked it up on the internet, and there's a lot of devices you can buy, and some of those devices seem to be good. But what I did was every time, we just worked on it for a whole day, and every time they barked at a leaf falling outside or a dog walking by the fence, which there are a lot because people walk nearby, I said, stop barking, and swatted them gently on the nose. And within one day, they stopped barking.
That's,
I mean, they still
good.
Bark a little bit, but it's night and day. And it was really low-tech. I didn't have to go buy a device.
A lot of people use the food aversion. So when that happens, they'll just redirect them to the food, redirect them. And that seems to help, too.
Really? But then you're rewarding them for barking.
Well, there's a fine line. Not really. You bring their attention, so you're rewarding them for looking at you, for their attention redirecting to you instead of what's bothering them.
And well, swatting them on the nose without hurting them also does seem to work.
Both Ben and I have learned a lot. We have an awesome director of behavior at the shelter named Suzanne, and we have both learned a tremendous amount from her. And one of the things I was thinking of when we were talking before is she was talking when we take our shelter dogs out for a walk, we try and get them out 3 times a day for some R&R. She said, you don't realize what a reward for a dog just sniffing is, just going out and smelling. And, you know, it's funny. When she first said that to me, I felt such an overwhelming sense of guilt and conviction for every time I'd taken a dog for a walk and was like, would you just stop smelling?
Yeah.
We're on a walk. The walk is the fun part. And when you realize that for a dog who has this incredibly sensitive nose, that is like an artist's palette of a jillion colors all in one little olfactory organ, that the joy in sniffing must be phenomenal. I mean, think about how great it is to look at incredible art or to read a book that the text has so many beautiful meanings, a poem that you can interpret in so many different ways. If we had that for smells, then we would be just like dogs. We'd be sniffing everything all the time.
Well, I think it's more than aesthetic, too. I think it's basically their version of reading their email and going to the corner.
What is Temple
Grandin? She calls it P-mail.
Yeah.
Temple Grandin says, you've got to let your dog check his P-mail.
Well, it's true. And just sort of going to the plaza or wherever the center of activity is and seeing who's been there and seeing who's coming.
Their calling card. What did they leave?
On the dog's walking route at the shelter and the incredible walking program that she's implemented, she's got little bits where she's spray painted along the route, which are good places to let the dog stop and smell. And it's been fascinating as that route gets used more and more dogs stop and smell there, how much more interesting that spot gets over time as every dog. I mean, it's really just one of the most beautiful things.
Yeah, and I've incorporated some of her techniques into my just daily doings with my dogs. And now I have this one walk where it's just a 20-minute walk where they have a chance to just, you know, I'm not in a hurry. Try not to be in a hurry. I just let them sniff, let them look around, let them be dogs.
And, so, of course, chasing things is also...
That's off limits on my house. I don't like that.
Ah, you don't like that. Well, so... Bill Hutchison, you are about to go get a master's degree in humanities, but you're talking very much in your work about and thinking about the relationship between humans and animals in literature and philosophy. Do you want to just tell us, give us a taste of what you're
that
working on?
That deep well that you can find.
I always feel a little hesitant about doing this elsewhere than in my long papers, but... A lot of it came about when I took an existentialism class in my undergrad and was introduced. I had an incredible professor who then introduced me to the thought in continental philosophy, specifically with Heidegger and Derrida on some of their work on animals. And philosophers who are dealing with animals are really, they're dealing with the same question. What is the nature of being? What is it to be a creature that is in this world? And one of the things that Derrida does in some of his later work is rather than try and privilege, as some other thinkers about animals do, to privilege the animal to the level of the human, his work seeks to deprivilege the human down to the level of the animal, to remember that what it is to be an animal is nature to us, and sort of using these hierarchical words like privilege up or privilege down is really not very fair, and it's a gross oversimplification. But I think that to use some maybe more New Agey sounding terminology, we are a community of beings, and that in separating ourselves from the world in which we live, from the way we are in the world, has been, I think, very destructive for us as a species. And it's gotten us a lot further from the ability to understand what it is to be in the world and then how to be in that way responsibly. So looking at how that's in the philosophical side, on the literary side, understanding how we have represented animals in literature through the evolution of literature itself is really a manifestation of how we have understood ourselves and our relationship with animals. So how Dickens may portray a dog in one of his novels versus how James Joyce may in his versus how Coetzee may write about animals in books like his spectacular Elizabeth Costello, you see a tremendous evolution. It's funny, I mean, it's so nerdy, but I get goosebumps just talking about it. Coetzee's novel, Elizabeth Costello, really, it was such a jump forward for a lot of literary thinking about animals, because he's able to use this academic woman and this character in his novel as his own mouthpiece for how he believes animals should be treated. Even in comic books, that's an area that I've been working in recently, to see how comic book artists like Grant Morrison, comic book writers, are really working to advocate for animals in just superhero comics. And that the importance of that and how it's reflected, how we see ourselves in our relationship with them, is so much not just about how we're treating animals, but about how we understand how we should treat ourselves, how the preciousness that we view human life with, and then in turn how we're able to understand how truly intense it is to be a creature that understands even that it exists, which I do believe that animals do. I mean, any animal wants to stay alive because it understands that it as itself exists, and there's a lot of power in that. And I feel so lucky and so blessed to have had the last 8.5 years at the shelter to really see these relationships, because what the shelter really becomes a staging ground for is the relationship between humans and animals. It's tremendously powerful.
And that all, in many ways, is integrated with ecosystem science, because when you see yourself as part of an ecosystem and you see ecosystems as these incredibly complex societies, they're kind of analogous to human societies. I mean, you can't take that analogy too far, but it's like there are people you think of as more important than others, and there are animals you think of as more important than others, but if you start to study it, it turns out that they all play a role.
All these systems have come out of the same sort of murk and mire, so the fact that they are really related is not surprising. I think, again, about Suzanne and some of the things I've learned from her about behavior. People get frustrated, why won't my dog do what I tell it to do? And one of the things that she does, we've been doing some really interesting classes at the shelter. Ben just took one on animal handling, and what our animal handling classes are really about is learning how to understand what these animals are saying to you.
Through observation, just really, you know, really paying attention to your dog or to a cat and what are they saying to you in the way that they can say that.
And I think in terms of what you're saying with ecosystem science, it's not a matter of forcing the will of the human as one of many species in a tiny amount of biomass on the planet trying to force everything around us to do what we tell it to do, but really how to understand how to be in conversation with the rest of the world. We're in conversation in our daily lives with dogs and cats in a way that they are profoundly aware of and that we miss 99% of. In the same way, we're in conversation with the environment around us, and everything is in conversation with everything else. And I think one of the really exciting things about working in animal welfare is getting tuned into that and really getting the opportunity to be a part of that, and realizing if you can get 1% into it, it is a tremendous enlightenment, and how much further you can go in it. It's really, if you know it, you know how exciting it is, and if you don't, all I can say is find a way to be a part of that conversation with the world.
And go adopt an older dog.
An older dog. That's or it, older sister. Cat.
You nailed it.
Because then you get to try it for a year or two. Because the dogs aren't going to live forever.
Absolutely. And you get to see how natural it is for essentially every other animal except for us to be in conversation with the world around them. I mean, that's something that animals do without. It is just in the nature of their being. The dogness of a dog is not just in being a dog, like it is for many humans. Being a human is just about being a human. But I think for dogs, cats, horses, pigs, everything, they are constantly in conversation with the world around them. They're picking up things. They're sending out signals. It's a tremendous and beautiful dialogue.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, not to sugarcoat it, it's predator and prey to a very large extent.
That's part of the conversation. Yeah. It is absolutely. I mean, if you think about how we are with each other, those same conversations that they engage in much more knowingly than we do, we engage in them in the business world, in social situations. I mean, that predator-prey, dominance, submission, all these conversations take place with us. We just are strangely tuned out of a lot of it. I think that's such an amazing thing to learn from how animals interact with other animals, how they interact with the world around them. It's a spectacular thing.
And I think animals have a way of just bringing us back into being more aware of our lives and everything. I'll never forget the last year of one of my dog's lives, Beta, that I felt like she was communing with the universe sometimes. She would just be staring outside. I don't know what. I felt she was talking to my other dog who had passed a few years before. I just preparing herself for that final passage, and I was very jealous that, you know, I couldn't be on that same plane with her. She was just very, like I said before, just, you know, wisdom and sageness. It was just an awesome experience to witness.
Ben Swan and Bill Hutchison are with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. They can be found on the web at
sfhumanesociety.com. sfhumanesociety.org.
sfhumanesociety.org.
And Mary Charlotte, I just want to avow in this public venue how lucky I think the shelter is that Ben will be taking over and stepping into a lot of the duties that I've done. This community is really lucky to have him. And I couldn't have handpicked a person that I would be more overjoyed to be doing a lot of the work that you and I have gotten to do over the years than Ben. He is a dynamic animal lover, and Santa Fe is lucky to have him.
Thank you, Bill.
We are very lucky to have you, and we are very sad to lose you, Bill Hutchison.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So in a year, you will be a master of humanities.
That's right. Which I think just means more.
You are master humanity.
Just being more in-depth of a student.
And we'll see what you do after that, but we hope you come back and visit. And thank you both so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And don't forget to go to What the Cat Dragged In.
Look What the Cat Dragged In.
This weekend to go to this wonderful estate sale. And thanks, guys.
Thanks,
hey,
Mary,
thank you, Mary Charlotte. You're a blessing to the community.
Indeed.
Just wanted to make sure to tell you that.
Thank you. I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Anna Carvelin. She is the organizer of the event Park Yourself Santa Fe, which is happening this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. She's a yoga and Pilates teacher and personal trainer. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So this is an event. It's basically a kind of like, what would you call it, random performance event throughout the city?
Yeah, it's anywhere in the city, any paid parking space. You grab a spot and do something fun and creative with it.
So basically, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week, any time of day, people will put money in a parking meter.
Right.
And instead of putting a car in it, they will put themselves in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of stuff, I mean, this has been done before, and it's been done in different cities besides Santa Fe. What kind of stuff happens in those parking spaces?
People do anything from theater performances to, I did a family reunion with mine a couple
you
years
did?
Ago. Mm-hmm. It was a small turnout. It was me and my sister and my mom, but it was really fun. People did all kinds of stuff, just laid grass down. So
in the parking space.
Mm-hmm.
And then what, sunbathe?
Nope, just one lady just put a bunch of grass down and left it there for several hours. So
what is the purpose of it?
Let's see, the purpose of it. It's a creative endeavor. I think it's good practice to look at and question our existing structures that we have and do something unique with it. And this is just a way of doing that and doing something fun with it.
What are you going to be doing with your space?
I am going to be teaching yoga, and I think I'm going to gear it toward people who want to take it home and to do stuff at home, and kind of simple practices that they can do in their living room. So I'm going to set up a space where they can sit with me, and we'll do some poses together and some things that they can do anywhere.
Does it feel, I mean, I would think it would feel kind of exposed because you're almost in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really protected from cars going by who don't know what
right.
you're doing.
Right. It's a really kind of vulnerable position to be in. But I think any creative endeavor can be. I think that, you know, this kind of came about for me anyways. I was really excited about it because I'm a commuter biker. I walk, you know. I never owned a car until I was 28. So I guess I was really frustrated feeling like I'm always in that vulnerable position. So it kind of flips that power dynamic in a way. You are in a vulnerable position, but you're also in a powerful position because you're just flipping the whole way people are doing things. And meanwhile, you're doing something fun and creative and non-aggressive with it. So
it's also, I was thinking, if I were walking down the street and somebody was doing something odd, driving down the street and somebody was doing something a little odd in a parking space, if I didn't know what it was, I would just think, I guess a lot of people would just think, weird, and then mm-hmm. go by and not think about it. But when people know about it, how do they respond? Like, what do people going by do?
Well, I had a couple from Switzerland last year, and they came up to me and they were like, oh, we saw it, you know, saw this advertised, we're looking for you guys, we're really excited. And So they came up and talked to me, and they took pictures, and they're putting it on their blog. But people who didn't know about it, you know, they come up and just ask questions, which is going to be most people. They don't know what you're doing. And so the main, it's like with any art, I think people need to interpret it their own way, and it that can be uncomfortable. And so anybody who's taking part in it also can interpret it their own way, and they can explain it in their own way. So that can be really uncomfortable for people not to be able to put it in a box and pigeonhole it. What is this, you know? But I think a lot of people have heard of this in different forms around the country. Different people have done different stuff.
In lots of cities.
Lots of cities, including a lot of times people will just build a park. And one of the things in New York, they put swimming pools and people swam for
in the parking space?
Mm-hmm.
They must have had more than one space.
Yeah, it was multiple. It was like a whole street. So that was really fun. So yeah, it's been different. It's been done in a lot of different ways.
Anna Carvelin is a yoga and Pilates instructor and a personal trainer. And you are also, besides doing Park Yourself Santa Fe, you're also teaching yoga classes. You have an intensive coming up?
Right. I have a four-week intensive Ashtanga-inspired practice that'll be at Yoga Moves from August 29th to September 23rd, every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. So if you're interested, you can call me 505-573-8899.
573-8899 is also the number for more information on Park Yourself Santa Fe. The website is parkyourselfsantafe.com. And if you want to reach Anna, it is Anna, A-N-N-A, at parkyourselfsantafe.com. Anna Carvelin, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
And I'd like to welcome to the program Rick O'Donovan. He has been on the program before. He's passing through town once again. He's a musician. He plays the hammer dulcimer, the mandolin, the guitar. He's a vocalist. His new disc is called Full On, and he will be playing this Thursday, actually next week, Thursday, September 1st, at the Historic Plaza Hotel in Las Vegas, New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's good to be back. As they say in Texas, this ain't my first rodeo. I just haven't been through Texas. I got those little colloquialisms on me. But it's good to be back to Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
It's not your first Radio Cafe show, which is almost as rough as a rodeo. So you are playing, and you've done this before in Santa Fe. Unfortunately, you won't be in Santa Fe this year, but you do these accompanying silent film gigs.
Yeah.
And especially with Greta Garbo.
Yeah, that's the current one I scored to a 90-minute film called The Temptress. I had first considered a film called The Joyless Street, but I thought, well, from a marketing PR standpoint, I think The Temptress is a little more luring than The Joyless Street.
Right.
But that's it. I tagged it Rico Meets Garbo. It seems to work perfect, so... Yeah, and I just had a couple down southern New Mexico in Las Cruces and in Grants with the Cibola Arts Gallery there. We did some wonderful shows. And actually, Saturday night back there at the Rio Grande in Las Cruces, they figured out that theater opened in 1926, the very year of the film I'm doing. And about 2 weeks before I arrived down there, David Salcido, the director, was cleaning out the basement of the theater and came across the actual movie poster. The film ran there in 1926.
Oh, so. My goodness.
And that was just an amazing... So, you know, when you do a venue like that, it's extra special to be in a historic theater.
Indeed. Let's talk about your new disc. You play, what, every instrument on it?
This is the first disc, Mary Charlotte. I'm actually... I feel like for a... independent singer-songwriter, multi-instrumental guy, that I'm actually carrying four discs for sale now, which is a bit unusual in today's download era. But the latest and greatest is the first CD that I actually ended up playing all the instruments. I got into production, and it just started to become like, well, dude, you can do it all. Get to work. And it kind of played into the title nicely, Full On.
Right.
and it's a CD of, it's not original material, it's traditional Irish music, but it's a mix of songs and tunes.
Songs and?
Tunes, instrumental.
Oh, yeah. Tunes are instrumental and songs are vocal.
It's trad Irish musicians speak here.
Okay.
They're like, there are tunes, what they call tunes and songs, and tunes are like jigs, reels, hornpipes, anything without vocalization or singing.
Now, is hammer dulcimer pretty much always used to play traditional Irish music?
It's very much not, and it actually, I really did cut my way in Ireland, because it's not a typical instrument for Irish music, and it's just a matter of ethnomusicology. It just didn't show up there until around the 40s and 50s, and you know, when I lived in Ireland for years, and if I had shown up with a fiddle, I probably wouldn't have paid the rent. And so the dulcimer, I really had the market cornered, and it just happens to suit the music really well.
It really does. But it's been, I remember this actually from when you were here, was it last year or the year before, you were talking about there's kind of Central European music gets played on on hammer dulcimer as well.
It has a deeper tradition, ethnomusicology-wise, in Turkey and Hungary. It's a prominent instrument there. And in Ireland, you know, the fiddle is always going to be at the center of Irish music, no matter what. Ireland just, you know, there was a fellow named John Ray that I emulate a lot. It's about my only thing that I could. There's some American players, wonderful women. Actually, most of the greatest players in America are women. I don't know why, but that's how it is. And but John Ray was an Irish guy from the 40s and 50s that there's some recordings of his that got captured and retained, and I listened to them a lot, and I think I copped a few moves off of him, honestly.
Well, we are pretty short on time, so you want to do a song from your new disc, Full On?
Yes. This is an old Scottish song by way of Anonymous. It's so old, nobody knows who wrote it. And it's called Peggy Gordon, and it's on the disc, which you can get at www.rickodonovan.com. Ah, Peggy Gordon, you are my darling. Come sit you down upon my knee and tell to me the very reason why I am slighted so by thee. I'm so in love that I can't deny it. My heart lies smothered in my breast, but it's not for you to let the whole world know it. A worried mind can know no rest.
Rick O'Donovan is a musician, hammer dulcimer player, mandolin, guitar, vocals. Once again, his new disc is called Full On. He'll be playing on Thursday, the 1st of September, at the historic Plaza Hotel in Las Vegas, New Mexico, a Greta Garbo film, The Temptress, with musical accompaniment. For more information, you can go to rickodonovan.com. Rico, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.